It was a wild card weekend in the NFL, and there was record-breaking action in the NBA. We'll get to that in just a moment. But first, the denial heard round the world. Well, the sports and news world, anyway.
Did your former trainer, Brian McNamee, ever inject you with anything?
Yes, he did.
What?
Lidocaine and B12. It's for my joints, and B12 I take still today. A lot of trainers have...
And that's all?
That's it.
Never a... human growth hormone?
Never.
Never testosterone?
Never.
And never an anabolic steroid?
Never.
Swear.
Pinky swear? Hey, that was former Yankees pitcher Roger Clemens on 60 Minutes last night, all red-faced and ticked off that he was named in that report released back on December 13th that linked more than 80 major league players to using steroids and performance-enhancing drugs. Clemens claimed if his former strength trainer Brian McNamee did inject him with steroids and human growth hormones in several seasons, the 45-year-old pitcher, hey, he would have noticed.
If what he's saying, which is totally false, if he's doing that to me, I should have a third ear coming on my forehead. I should be pulling tractors with my teeth.
That'd be a sight to see. Well, watching that last night on my couch, the Howard Cosell of the BPP's Monday Sports Talk, Bill Wolf, my husband and former pro sports producer guy. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, I thought you were describing our cat. Also watching on the couch.
We were really into the Musharraf interview on 60 Minutes, which was great.
I don't wish to flack for 60 Minutes, but it was an excellent episode last night.
It was.
Yep.
So ultimately, what did you think about the strength of Clemens' denial?
Well, like anybody else, I try to put myself in Clemens' position. I'm falsely accused of something that's extremely damaging to me. I wonder how would I react? And I thought that Clemens reacted as I would in that circumstance, which was to be outraged. I mean, he looked like he could barely control himself. He was so mad. He was fidgeting in the chair and sort of looked as if he wanted to jump across and grab Mike Wallace by the throat and say, this guy's a liar, this guy's a liar, this guy's a liar. So I thought it was, all things considered, I thought it was an extremely stout defense. But, you know, he never did call Brian McNamee a liar, and that's significant. If he's so certain that the guy's lying, why wouldn't he just come out and say he's a liar? I thought the language was extremely carefully chosen, let's say that.
Well, Clemens said he only took injections of painkillers and B12 so he could stay in the crucial games. Is that common for players of his caliber?
Yes, that's common for players of all calibers in all sports. What, you know, particularly for a guy as old as Clemens was and is, these guys put their bodies through unnaturally difficult trials over extended periods of time. Don't forget that Brett Favre, the great Brett Favre, as a younger player, had to kick an addiction to painkillers because he, you know, couldn't perform without them. So it's feasible that he took only painkiller and B12, I suppose, particularly the painkiller. That is a common thing. These guys are testing themselves. It's like as if you went to the gym and had the hardest workout of all time and you did it 6 days a week, you'd be sore, and in order to perform at an elite level, you might need a pain masker to get through it. So the painkiller part resonates. I think that's true. The B12 part is less, I don't know, I feel less inclined to believe the B12 part.
Well, it was interesting. He had a lot of outrage, but he wasn't really concrete. He didn't call McNamee a liar, but he said some of these things that you're saying are lies.
Right.
And when Mike Wallace asked Clemens, I thought it was interesting. He said, why would this guy lie about you when apparently he's told the truth about Andy Pettit? Andy Pettit's admitting to all this doping shenanigans. Andy Pettit also named in that Mitchell report.
And Andy Pettit, close friend of Roger Clemens and a workout partner of Roger Clemens. That's why Andy Pettit is so significant, yeah. Well, I thought that was a good question that Wallace asked, and it remains unanswered. Brian McNamee cut an immunity deal with the feds, and they said, well, if you'll name names in this steroid scandal, we won't prosecute you. We won't put you in jail. But if you lie to us, if you give us false information, we will jail you. So Wallace asks, as you said, asks Roger Clemens, so why would McNamee lie? What is his motive? He doesn't get anything out of it. And Clemens' response is, well, seems to me like he stayed out of jail. That's not the most thoughtful response by Roger Clemens.
But the other issue is there's no really hard evidence here. This comes down to he said, he said.
Yeah, unless McNamee has receipts. That's really how a lot of this stuff has been proved, is receipts that guys, you know, cut checks to trainers, cashier's checks, regular bank checks, in you know, hundreds and hundreds, and in some cases thousands of dollars to buy this stuff. Unless he's got the paper trail, there is no hard evidence against Roger Clemens, and we are all left to, you know, look at Roger Clemens' choice of words and say, well, he didn't call him a liar, and if he really thought he was a liar, he'd call him a liar. Therefore, Roger Clemens isn't telling the truth. I don't know. I thought it was an impressive defense. My visceral reaction was, wow, Roger Clemens might be innocent of the things he says he's innocent of.
But I know you think that when he appears under oath before a congressional subcommittee on January 16th, that his answers will be nuanced.
You won't hear
the same kind of back and forth.
Yeah, I do think that. If he appears. He has not yet decided whether or not to appear.
Oh, he's going to get subpoenaed if he hasn't been already.
Well, okay, so let's say he does appear. I think his answers will allow him room to say he didn't do it without declaring definitively that the guy who's – without declaring definitively that he didn't do it. In other words, he'll say, well, I was injected, but I didn't know what was being injected into me. That's a defense that several other guys accused of steroids have used. Well, I thought he was giving me flaxseed oil. That was one excuse. I think it was either Barry Bonds or Gary Sheffield said, I thought what was being injected to me was flaxseed oil. I didn't realize it was steroids. So that sort of takes the curse off willing performance-enhancing drug use. It removes that curse while leaving open the possibility that, in fact, the player did use performance-enhancing drugs. So I think if Clemens is under oath, it'll be a little less red-faced and a little less hostile and angry and defensive and a little more well-coached.
I do have one more question, though. We talked about there wasn't necessarily any physical evidence, unless McNamee has these receipts, as you suggest. Mm-hmm. But was Roger Clemens that much better of a player during the time that he was allegedly injected with these substances in 98 and 01?
98, no. 98, he'd gotten off to a sluggish start, and according to the calendar and the accusation, his performance did improve enormously in the middle of that season. And 2003, he had come off a less than stellar, I'm sorry, 2001, a less than stellar 2000 season, and was excellent again in 2001. So I guess in a narrow frame, yes. In the broader frame of Roger Clemens' career, no. These are 2 years in which he won the Cy Young Award for being the best pitcher, but he won seven of those. So let's say he did take performance-enhancing drugs in those 2 years and won the Cy Young. There were five, and that was the limit of his use. There were five other years in which he was so brilliant that he was voted the best pitcher in the league. So, in the narrow window of those individual seasons, he was probably, if he did it, he seems to have gotten some immediate boost from it. But taking the broader perspective of his entire career, not really. He was a brilliant pitcher from 1986, basically, all the way through 2006, or even, you could argue, 2007.
Well, Clemens is scheduled to hold a news conference later today, so we'll keep everybody updated on the blog with any new developments. We're talking to Bill Wolf, Bryant Park Project Monday morning quarterback, and I know we're going to get to some football, but I know there was a basketball game that you were actually more interested in this weekend that people may have missed if they were watching all the football. The Boston Celtics taking on the Detroit Pistons. I looked this up. It says, from my research here,
yeah.
The first time since 1981, two teams entered a game on January 5th with a combined 54 wins. So these two big teams with these winning streaks, what happened?
What happened was the Boston Celtics beat the Detroit Pistons. And a brief aside, that is this. Watching basketball right now is sort of like if you had too much to drink before you go to bed, you drink a lot of water so you don't wake up with a hangover. Well, if you're really into football and you get to the Super Bowl and then it ends, you're going to be really bumming. So watch a little basketball now, and then when the Super Bowl happens, you can slide right into basketball with no depression or feeling of loss. And that's what this is. This is your bottle of water before you go to bed. The Celtics beat the Pistons. They are the two best teams in the Eastern Conference. The Pistons are sort of the established power. And Boston is suddenly great because they've acquired these, they have these three super-duper star players, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, and Kevin Garnett.
Which one's a big baby?
Big baby is called Glenn Davis.
I just like to say that.
Okay, big baby was the star of this game. He had 20 points. He played at LSU, and he's a big round mound of astound. He's called Big Baby because he looks like a big baby. I mean, he has the physical appearance of a baby. He sort of has his baby fat, and he has a baby face, only he's like 6'9", 280.
He's a big baby.
Giant guy. He's also known as Baby Shaq because he sort of looks like Shaquille O'Neal, only he's a little bit smaller.
He's like Baby Barkley more.
He's somewhere in between. He's bigger than Charles Barkley. He's smaller than Shaquille O'Neal, and he's called Big Baby, and he played for LSU where he was fairly famous but not thought to be necessarily a great pro prospect. And in the game against the Pistons, they sort of shut down or contained the Celtics' big three great players, Garnett, Pierce, and Allen, and it left Glenn Davis, Big Baby, open to score 20 points and get Boston a very big win at Detroit. Boston has now won 29 and lost only three, and that is not quite record pace, but right close to record pace for excellence in the NBA. Boston is off to an amazing and historic, a near New England Patriots level start.
All right. Well, for those people who still want to drink in all their football, which game do you want to talk about the most? We've got about 3 minutes left.
I think the Giants game against Tampa Bay is interesting. We had on this very program had a discussion last week before the final regular season game whether the Giants, who had apparently ostensibly nothing at stake, should play all of their best players against the Patriots in the final regular season game, or should they rest their best players and not risk injury? You remember that one?
Yeah, but they ended up with some injured players, even though they went for it.
They went for it, and they lost defensive back Sam Madison and their center O'Hara to injury in that game against the Patriots. But they played yesterday at Tampa Bay, and so the proof would be in the pudding. If they won, then it would have been a good idea to play all the players against the Patriots. If they lost, it would have been a bad idea. Well, they won. They really dominated Tampa Bay on the road, and it looks as if the confidence that New York got by playing everybody and playing so well in a valiant loss to the Patriots on that last Saturday night of the regular season carried into the playoffs. That confidence allowed them to roll Tampa Bay yesterday, and now they get a shot at Dallas in Dallas next Sunday, and that's anybody's game. The Giants could easily win it. So I thought it was the most interesting game because it answered a question that we had asked the week before.
All right, and the Giants won that game 24-14. There is one I want to ask you about. We've got a minute left.
Yep.
It's sort of sports cliche school. Every headline saying end to Cinderella story in the Washington Redskins. They lost the Seattle Seahawks 35-14. Can you explain the fairy tale angle?
The fairy tale angle is that the Redskins player, Sean Taylor, who was an excellent, excellent player, had his home invaded in late November, and he was shot, and his femoral artery was severed, and he died the next day. And, you know, just the worst
sad
kind
story.
Of unnecessary, horrible tragedy. And the Redskins to that point weren't playing very well, but something about that loss seemed to galvanized the team, and they went on a great winning streak, an unlikely winning streak, using a backup quarterback, and somehow they made the playoffs, which was really the heartwarming underdog story of the year, these guys playing for their fallen mate. And yesterday they went to Seattle, and they, in fact, in an unlikely way, had the lead late in the game. In the fourth quarter, they led 14-13, and in fact had the ball close to the goal line and might have scored another. But their kicker missed a field goal. They turned the ball back over, and Seattle, who really probably has not probably has better players than Washington, turned it on, scored three touchdowns in the late stages of the game, and won the game. So that was the end of the great run by the Redskins. But they really were, you know, that was the great story late in the season, was the way they pulled it together after their friend Sean Taylor died.
Bill Wolf, our Monday morning quarterback. Hey, can we talk you into hosting later this week?
Call my representative. Yes, of course.
All right, Bill, thanks a lot.
All right, darling, I'll talk to you later.
And thanks for listening to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.